On the evening of April 13th, 2024, Iran announced the launch of around 170 drones, more than 30 cruise missiles, and 120 ballistic missiles toward the modern nation of Israel. This marked the first direct attack on Israel by Iran. As the hours ticked by, most of the projectiles were shot down before entering Israeli airspace. Around 2 a.m. on the 14th, explosions could be seen above the skies of Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and other Israeli cities as the remaining projectiles were shot down by Israeli defense systems. On July 29th, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh was assassinated while visiting Iran. Israel also launched a bombing strike in the Lebanon capital of Beirut, which killed Hezbollah commander Fuad Shukr, among others. While many national leaders have urged restraint, Iran has promised retaliation, either by its own forces or through its proxies in Lebanon, Gaza, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. Many analysts warn that these events are leading toward a large-scale regional war. The history of the Middle East is one of violence. The question of how to achieve and maintain peace in the Middle East has puzzled diplomats, politicians, philosophers, and theologians for decades, if not centuries, if not millennia. The triangle formed between Egypt, Turkey, and Iran is home to more than 500 million people, land holy to three major religions and countless sects within those religions, vast resources including oil and natural gas, and some of the world's most important trade routes through the Suez Canal, Persian Gulf, Bab el-Mandeb, and Bosporus. The Bible describes the long-term future of this region as a prosperous one, but it also describes significant bumps and upheavals along the way. On today's program, we're offering a free resource, The Middle East in Prophecy, to help you make sense of the many biblical prophecies concerning this part of the world. Stay tuned as I'll show you, from the scriptures, the events leading up to and the results of two coming wars for control of the Middle East. Welcome to Tomorrow's World, where we analyze the biggest events and trends of today, and using the Bible as a guide, describe how they will affect you and shape the world tomorrow. We'll begin today's program with a look at the current state of affairs in the Middle East. Then we'll look at two future battles the Bible describes occurring to determine control of the Middle East and ultimately the world. Before we discuss the future of the Middle East, it's important that we try to understand its present and identify the key nations involved. Turkey is a nation caught between the continents of Europe and Asia. For years after Turkey was accepted into NATO, it attempted to draw closer to Europe and even applied to join the European Union. However, with its application rejected, it returned focus to Asia and the Middle East in particular. While its president is a devout Islamist, Turkey itself is the most secular of the Muslim nations we'll be describing today, and has a population of 85 million. Egypt is also a crossroads nation, marking the border between Africa and Asia. After signing a peace agreement with Israel in 1979, Egypt received significant military funding from the United States and enjoyed relative stability before the government was overthrown in 2011 during the Arab Spring. Its population has exploded to 105 million, and Egypt must balance its attention on its interests in the Middle East with its growing need to maintain relations with Ethiopia in order to maintain water security. Saudi Arabia is the center of the Muslim religion Islam, with two of its cities, Mecca and Medina, being the two most holy sites of Islam, by far the most common religion of the region. It is a very wealthy nation due to its expansive oil and natural gas reserves, which allow it to project power greater than its population of 32 million would suggest. In June of 2024, Saudi Arabia announced that it would not renew its commitment to pricing oil in U.S. dollars, known as the petrodollar deal. This will make Saudi Arabia less dependent on the U.S., and allow it to further integrate with other nations. Iran was once home to the powerful Persian Empire. Islam is divided primarily into two major factions, the Sunnis and the Shia. The Shia are dominant in Iran, and Iran sends significant funds to nations with Shia majorities, Lebanon, Syria, and the Houthis of Yemen, in order to project influence throughout the region. Iran's control of the Persian Gulf, a major choke point through which much of the world's oil travels, has been a source of turmoil for those nations dependent on the oil that travels through it. Iran boasts a population of 84 million. Israel was formed in 1948 after Hitler attempted to exterminate the Jewish people. The recognition of this nation resulted in immediate warfare as the surrounding nations saw the new nation as an invasive force that needed to be removed. Israel has fought to maintain its security and has received significant aid from the United States, Great Britain, and other nations. It has become a prosperous nation, serving as an innovation hub. It is by far the smallest of the nations we've discussed, with a population of just under 10 million. While relations between Israel and her neighbors have always been tumultuous, there was a period beginning at the end of 2014 where most of the news was positive. The Abraham Accord saw Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Morocco normalize relations with Israel, breaking ranks from the Arab League and recognizing the existence of an Israeli nation. This occurred in December of 2020. Saudi Arabia, too, appeared to be moving towards normalizing relations with Israel. When the news was not filled with reports of violence, there was opportunity to downplay grievances and push forward with governmental cooperation. That opportunity appears to have passed. Not all of the Middle East's troubles are derived from the formation of Israel. Turkey, Egypt, and Iran have historically served as the primary bases of power from which the region has been dominated. Even today, these nations are vying for power with each other. While Saudi Arabia has been a religious base of power in the Sunni regions since the founding of Islam, the wealth generated by oil deposits has allowed it to flex its muscle in the region as well. Those competing for control of the Middle East are not limited to Middle Eastern nations. Russia, the United States, and the European Union all exert a tremendous amount of influence on the region. One could point to any of these nations or groups of nations suggesting that they'll be the aggressor in the next war for control of the region, and find any number of sources or experts to agree. So what will happen in this region, and who will be the players in the coming wars for control of the Middle East? We're going to look to an ancient source, the Bible, to see what it predicts for the future of the region. But first, we have to address the reliability of this source. It has proven to be reliable beyond measure. It is reliable as a source of moral values and also a reliable source of information regarding major events that lie just ahead of us. If you're a longtime viewer, I hope that you've taken the time to prove this book's reliability. If you haven't, I encourage you to do so. For the sake of today's program, before we get into the specific prophecies concerning wars for control of this region, I want to turn to the book of Zechariah to highlight the reliability of this source. Zechariah wrote approximately 500 years prior to the life of Christ, meaning these words were recorded 2,500 years ago. It's no small thing to accurately describe the conditions of a city 2,500 years into the future, and it should lend some credence to the additional prophecies we'll be reviewing. Writing about the time just prior to Christ's return, Zechariah writes, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples, when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall happen in that day that I will make Jerusalem a very heavy stone for all peoples. All who would heave it away will surely be cut in pieces, though all nations of the earth are gathered against it." Jerusalem is described as a trouble spot, a source of frustration for the surrounding nations, and a city that is not easily overcome. Those who plot against it are described as being cut in pieces. Few who have attacked Israel in recent decades have prospered afterwards. Just a few chapters later, we're given a hint of how the city would be populated. "For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city." The statement that half would be taken captive and the other half would still have full access to the city would seem like a very strange description for just about any other city. Is it all that difficult to imagine that if Jerusalem were to fall, half the population would be treated harshly, while the other half would be granted favor? Of course not. Jerusalem today is a divided city. It's no small feat to select a city and describe its makeup and place on the world scene more than 2,000 years into the future. The same being that inspired these passages inspired the warning we'll review during the remainder of the program, describing two great wars for control of the Middle East. Welcome back. The threat of war erupting in the Middle East and drawing in many of the world's greatest powers has loomed for the entire lifetime of most of you watching. It's a region that has been plagued by instability. As we saw in the first portion of our program, there's no shortage of regional powers who would like to dominate the region. We've also seen evidence to support the reliability of the Bible to describe future events for this region. With that in mind, let's explore two predicted conflicts where great powers battle for control of the Middle East. Speaking to his disciples, Jesus gave what is often referred to as the Olivet Prophecy. This warning included a description of several major events and trends which would take place just prior to Christ's return. The gospel accounts of Matthew, Mark, and Luke all detail this prophecy. Luke's account builds on the prophecy we previously read from the book of Zechariah, which described half of the city of Jerusalem going into captivity. Luke 21 and verse 20. "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant, and to those who are nursing babies in those days. For there will be great distress in the land, and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword, and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." Let's notice several things here. The city of Jerusalem is surrounded by enemy armies. The city will fall, and a portion of the city will be led away captive, just as in Zechariah's account. The city will then be occupied by non-Jews. Matthew's account clearly describes the same events, but provides additional details. Matthew 24 and verse 15. "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be." In Luke's account, those who understand are directed to flee Jerusalem when it is surrounded by armies. In Matthew's account, the event that signals the time to flee is something called the abomination of desolation. Yet the fall of Jerusalem is clearly at the same time. It is from Matthew's account that we get the name the Great Tribulation, a label we often give to this entire time period of troubles. Matthew's account also tells us where to look next for additional information: to the book of Daniel, where the 11th and 12th chapters contain an astonishing prophecy covering events from the time of Daniel up to the return of Christ. The 11th chapter contains a long and detailed prophecy about a conflict between two powerful entities, the king of the north and the king of the south. For much of the passage, these two kings refer to two competing powers which emerged after the death of Alexander the Great. Alexander's armies had swept over much of the known world with blazing speed before his early death. Four powers emerged, controlling different regions of Alexander's empire. The king of the north refers to the Greek Seleucid dynasty, which controlled much of the northern Middle East. Its first base of power was in ancient Babylon before relocating to Antioch in modern-day Syria. The king of the south refers to the Ptolemaic dynasty, which ruled from Egypt until the death of Cleopatra, the last of the Ptolemies. These two powers wrestled for control of the Middle East, and the 11th chapter of Daniel gives vivid details of their conflict, attempts at uneasy alliances, treachery, and backstabbing. However, this program isn't titled Past Wars for the Middle East. I'm not sure how many programs we would have to do in a series to give justice to that topic. We're looking at wars which lie ahead. In the 40th verse of chapter 11, the time frame of this prophecy jumps forward to events which have not yet occurred. You may be wondering how the Seleucids and Ptolemies have anything to do with modern geopolitics. As we go through this, it will become more clear. At the time of the end, the timing of this passage could not be any more clear. "The king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. He shall also enter the glorious land," that is, the modern nation of Israel, "and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon." These three nations comprise what is now Jordan. "He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain." A future king or ruler of the South in some way provokes a future king or ruler of the North. The king of the North then battles through the Middle East like lightning, occupying modern Israel and crushing Egypt. While we should not jump to the conclusion that Egypt alone is the king of the South, given the historical precedents and the description here, it's clear that if Egypt is not itself the king of the South, Egypt will be part of this powerful alliance. Ethiopia and Libya are also mentioned as fighting alongside Egypt, and other nations may be tied into this alliance as well. The general identity of the king of the South is fairly easy to ascertain. The king of the North is a little more complicated. We'll turn to the book of Revelation, where we find more information that can help us to understand. Revelation 11 describes the fall of Jerusalem that we read of in Matthew, Luke, and Daniel. This time, we're given the length of time that the occupation will last. "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there, but leave out the court which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months." Revelation 13 describes a prophetic power referred to as the beast, and also tells the length of time when it shall have power. "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?' And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. So we see a great military power who no one can withstand given power for 42 months. These are not the only similarities between the prophesied king of the North and the prophesied beast power. It is clear that they are one and the same. Now, who is this beast power? Longtime viewers will know this beast power is a 10-nation power block which will emerge out of Europe, fueled by an influential religion. To be more specific, a religion that claims to be Christian. I'll encourage you to visit our website at twcanada.org or our YouTube channel, as we have a variety of resources revealing the identity of this beast power. The initial predicted war for control of the Middle East is not instigated by Iran or Turkey. Daniel's description is clear. A group of nations from the south, that is south of Jerusalem, including Egypt, will provoke a European bloc that will then sweep through the Middle East, annihilating those who stand against it. They will devastate Egypt, Libya, and Ethiopia, while sparing the nation of Jordan, indicating that Jordan may ally themselves with this beast. That European bloc will also take control of the modern nation of Israel, deporting the Jewish half of the city as captives and occupying the city for a period of 42 months, 3.5 years. You may be wondering what happens after the 42-month occupation. There still remains another war for control of the Middle East, and I'll tell you about that when I return in a moment. In our last segment, we saw a prophesied war for control over the Middle East. A 10-nation European bloc swiftly cuts through and devastates the nation of Egypt and several of her allies. We read of the city of Jerusalem falling to this beast power, and half of the city being led away captive. From the book of Revelation, we read that this occupation would last 3.5 years. It also leads to the next prophesied war for control of Jerusalem, Israel, and the entire Middle East. This war will occur on an even grander scale, reach even further around the globe, and have a much longer lasting effect. Back in the 11th chapter of Daniel, the initial phase of this second war is described. After the king of the North overpowers the king of the South, we read in Daniel 11, verse 44, "But news from the East and the North shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many." This passage describes the king of the North preparing for battle against a force from the north and the east. In the book of Revelation, we read of an exceedingly large military force with some relation to the river Euphrates, a river which lies to the northeast of Jerusalem. "Then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar which is before God, saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, 'Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates.' So the four angels who had been prepared for the hour, the day, and month, and year were released to kill a third of mankind. Now the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million. I heard the number of them." Later in Revelation, we again read of an army associated with the Euphrates River. Then the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up, so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are spirits of demons, performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. The gathering of this great military force is being directed by a spirit presence. The battle they are being prepared for is even given a name, the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Of course, you may be aware that just two verses later, the name of a location is given, which has become a popular synonym for the battle. And they gathered them together to the place called in Hebrew, Armageddon. These nations are brought together, seemingly with the initial belief that they would be fighting each other. They find themselves united, fighting against a singular force unlike anything any army has ever faced. We can read about this in Revelation 19. Now I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. And he who sat on him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and makes war. Now out of his mouth goes a sharp sword, that with it he should strike the nations, and he himself will rule them with a rod of iron. This battle is a short one, as the armies of this world prove no match for Christ and his saints. And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who worked signs in his presence. In this second war for the Middle East, we see the beast power, the powerful European bloc of nations preparing for war with a massive military alliance from the east. These armies join forces in order to fight against what they see as an invader coming from off the planet, the returning Jesus Christ. The battle is swift, and no doubt is left regarding who will hold control over Jerusalem, the Middle East, and the world. Let's turn now back to Zechariah's account of this battle and its ramifications. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations, as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two, from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it toward the south. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day it shall be, the Lord is one, and his name one. Zechariah specifically describes the war-torn city of Jerusalem, finally established as a city of peace and prosperity, a beacon of hope to all the world. Thus says the Lord, I will return to Zion and dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Jerusalem shall be called the City of Truth, the mountain of the Lord of Hosts, the Holy Mountain. Thus says the Lord of Hosts, old men and old women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each one with his staff in his hand because of great age. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in its streets. How deeply has the world longed to see such peace on the streets of Jerusalem? Accords, treaties, and peace plans have all fallen short. But the return of Jesus Christ will finally bring resolution to the issues plaguing the city. Peace and prosperity will not be restricted to Jerusalem or the nation of Israel. Many passages describe the nations of the world looking to Jerusalem for leadership and guidance. One in particular singles out God's future blessings on Egypt and peaceful relationship between Egypt and Israel. The remaining nations of the Middle East would find themselves in a similar situation. Then the Lord will be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians will know the Lord in that day, and will make sacrifice and offering. Yes, they will make a vow to the Lord and perform it. In that day there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian will come into Egypt and the Egyptian into Assyria, and the Egyptians will serve with the Assyrians. In that day, Israel will be one of three with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, Blessed is Egypt my people, and Assyria the work of my hands, and Israel my inheritance. At last, the Middle East will enter a period of sustained peace, absent the current power struggles which have plagued the region for millennia. On today's program, we've looked at two coming wars for control of the Middle East. No one looks forward to warfare and destruction. This region has seen far too much of it. The Bible is a reliable source for predicting the future, and it describes these wars with astonishing precision. Most importantly, it describes the final result: a nation, a region, a world at peace under the direction of Jesus Christ. Be sure to order your free copy of The Middle East in Prophecy to review these prophecies in greater detail. From all of us here at Tomorrow's World, thank you for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed the program and that you found it to be profitable. Tune in next time as Gerald Weston, Stuart Vahovic, and I will continue to bring you the wonderful news of Tomorrow's World. I hope you profited from this video. If you found it helpful and want to learn more, be sure to get your free study guide on the Middle East in Prophecy by clicking the link in the description or go to twtv.org/east. We here at Tomorrow's World want to help you understand our world through the pages of the Bible. So be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the bell so you don't miss another video. Thank you for watching. See you next time.